How's it going, everybody? This is the Nitty Gritty. My name is Chad. With me, as usual, is Leonard. This is a show about wrestling. This week, we're going to be reviewing and recapping Elimination Chamber 2026. And I watched it. Leonard did not, but Leonard saw a couple clips that we will get to. And, I didn't plan on watching this, but it just so happened that I was home and I had access to it. So I figured, why not? Let's throw it on.
And of course, as we have discussed, I do not have access to it
Right.
when we did the Royal Rumble. Not that I've been watching a lot of current programming, as we all know, but at the same time, if Chad says watch this, I do. So I didn't really know a whole lot about what happened. I did review a few things before coming on the air, and I did watch a clip that Chad has sent me on of something from Raw. And so, we'll see what your thoughts are and where I can maybe chip in.
All right, so this event took place February 28th, 2026, from the United Center in Chicago. The attendance was 19,346. This apparently was the first televised event at the United Center the WWE has held since 1994's SummerSlam,
Oh, really? Okay.
which I did not realize. And so let's get to the event itself. And I did some math here because this, event from start to finish, I think it was a little under 3 hours, just a shade under 3 hours. But the amount of wrestling that took place during this event comprised of about 85 minutes total, which I think says a lot about how long the entrances take. And yes, there was a segment that we'll talk about, but four matches, 85 minutes, 3 hour show. On this end, you have WWE doing it that way. More of the entertainment factor, production value, whatever you want to say. And the other end, you have AEW, who's like, you know what? Our show's going to be 6 hours. It's
6 hours.
going to be nonstop wrestling. So,
Yeah, 30, 30, but 37 matches in 6 hours.
and so neither company, I think, is doing it 100% correct. But in any event, let's get to the first match, which is the Women's Elimination Chamber match. And this is for a WWE Women's Championship match, WrestleMania 42 against Jade Cargill. So the participants in this match, I should probably go over them in order that they were, in order that they were eliminated anyway. You had Alexa Bliss, Kiana James, Asuka, Raquel Rodriguez, Tiffany Stratton, and the winner was Rhea Ripley. And that match was about 24 minutes long. We'll just kind of go over this here, Leonard, so that you can chime in some thoughts. And in this episode, you'll kind of hear me criticize both companies in a way, but I feel like WWE in this case has more opportunities to make this apparent. And at this point, the Elimination Chamber, and you can say this about War Games, or as AEW calls it, Blood and Guts, are so structured in a certain way that they have lost all of their luster, in my opinion, almost all of their luster. Now, if you have a great feud between certain people, or in the case of War Games, between two factions, it can be great no matter what the structure is that looks the same as it always has. But the Elimination Chamber is just so tired now. And I challenge anybody. And you know what? I thought when I was watching this event, Leonard, I thought about what Triple H said recently on one of the post shows. Don't be a critic, just watch it and just enjoy it, or something to that effect. That's what he wants people to do. You can't criticize WWE, apparently, but I tried. But to me, the Elimination Chamber match itself, whether it be men or women in it, is so tired. And they just do it because it's like, well, it's always been a part of, this, and now it's like the road to WrestleMania. We need to choose, whoever faces the other champion. It's just everybody has to get their shit in, as we've talked about in the past. And that's what you have here. You have the people coming in, they get a couple moves in, and people lay around. And I'm probably exaggerating its badness in this case. It wasn't terrible, but you know, you have people have the spot where somebody goes through the plastic, the glass, whatever that is, of the pods. You have somebody get on top of the pod and do a move. You know, you have somebody who acts as like the heavy, kind of like somebody that's going to eliminate two or three people, but you know they're not winning. Like, you know, every match has the same setup, the same exact setup.
Well, let me ask you this. How would you change it?
Well, I think I would have a plan to kind of an overarching plan through to do for the match itself. Like, obviously you have to have people come out in certain intervals, but I'd have a strategy. And I think they talked about this once on Bruce Pritchard's podcast. Like, they wanted for the ECW one that everybody hates, December to Dismember, I think.
Yeah.
They wanted Punk in that one. Paul Heyman wanted Punk to like run the table and beat everybody with the Anaconda Vice. And they're like, no, we're not doing that. And I'm not suggesting doing something like that, but you could have somebody like set up some sort of strategy where like their people are unable to like get over on that guy. Something to shake up the routine a little bit. Or have it be, you know what, we're not going to have anybody go off the top of the pods. We're not going to have anybody go through the plastic this time. We're not going to have those same spots. Mm-hmm. Or if you're going to do those types of spots, change them up a little bit. Like, do something different. Like, there was a clip I saw of an old one that was fun where, like, Chris Jericho came out of the pod and The Undertaker did his thing where he sits up and Chris Jericho went back in the pod and closed it. Like, you know, yeah. Like that type of stuff.
Yeah. You know what I would do is I would take it away for a few years.
That was going to be literally the next thing that came out.
Okay. Yeah. You know, hey, and I know Jim Cornette says this all the time. How can we miss you if you don't go away?
Right. I mean, look at, in the case of movies, Scary Movie 6, the trailer is out. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, people watch that. But a lot of people probably think that looks funny, looks interesting. Absence makes the heart grow fonder. Because people forget how terrible some of those movies were, but now it's been away for a long enough time.
Right. And you just remember the ones you liked or the funny moment that right. you remember from the one film that you liked. Yeah. So the same thing, take it away and don't even really comment on, just let it go away. And then in a couple of years, when you really have, you know, build a storyline coming out of the Rumble where you've got four or five very viable contenders for that title shot. And then it's like, oh, well, this is how we settle that, you know. Yeah. Storyline is another one. Like you said, I think it's like, well, we have to have it because we have to have it.
Right.
And we're going to put these guys in it because those are the guys that you would put in it.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, for a while there, they looked like they were going away from it because only certain arenas could hold the chamber.
Because of the size, yeah.
You know, and like, so one of the stats that I didn't read was like, this is the first one in a while that's been held in the U.S. In any event, Rhea Ripley won. And that was, to me, the safe choice, probably the wisest choice. Yeah. It came down to her and Tiffany.
Well, when you said all the names, I was going, and then Rhea Ripley, and I went, yeah, I mean, of those, who else are you going to send against Jade Cargill? They have not done Ripley and Cargill, correct?
I don't think so. I mean, okay. Tiffany Stratton was the runner-up in the Rumble, so, like, there was a possibility there, but, you know, and now Rhea Ripley and Jade Cargill have a possibly shoot, possibly not feud on social media. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're building that. Rhea Ripley, I'm sure, will go over. They haven't had Jade Cargill defend the belt, like, hardly at all. Maybe mm-hmm. once or twice. I don't know.
I think that match is short, and I think Ripley holds her hand, and it might be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. The next match was Becky Lynch against AJ Lee. And AJ Lee defeated Becky Lynch 15 minutes, 40 seconds for the WWE Women's Intercontinental Championship. And I will admit I have not watched every single piece of wrestling that AJ Lee has done since she's returned, but man, oh day, if anybody deserves a raise, it's Becky Lynch, because she absolutely carried AJ Lee through this match to the point where, like, to me, it was just obvious that AJ Lee can only do so much. And it's obvious now, if it wasn't to other people already who watch WWE every week, that the Divas era and the Women's Revolution era, skill-wise, are two very, very different eras.
I never liked AJ Lee, and I never did like her. And the people who do think she's just hot, which I don't get either.
Right.
Because she's built like a 12-year-old boy, and she looks like one. And so I never got her, and I never thought that she was any good in the ring.
Yeah, and so this match to me was nothing special. Becky Lynch not only carried her in the ring, but every time AJ Lee makes an appearance on one of the shows, I've seen clips of this. But Becky Lynch looks like she's seeing Andre the Giant. Like, I mean, and like it's over the top to the point of like, okay, like we could dial it back a few notches. Like, she's not that intimidating. Like,
did you see the CM Punk picture online where he was wearing the belt?
Yes, I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, so he was wearing the one belt as a bra and the other as like underwear, as Stacey Keibler famously did, as Chelsea Green famously did.
And also Becky Lynch and Seth Rollins did that with belts at one point.
Oh, yes, as well. The earlier ones were the ones I more clearly remembered.
Yeah, Stacey Keibler, we all remember that.
Yeah. So he posted that, and I believe Becky's response was, just livid, and I've got to get my belt back, and how dare you, and all that.
Yeah. By the way, the women's Elimination Chamber match, I might go 2.5 if I'm being generous on that one. This match between AJ Lee and Becky Lynch, I might go 2.75. That might be a little harsh. The crowd seemed to be into it. They were happy AJ Lee won. It's in Chicago. That's where she and CM Punk live. Not a surprise there to me. So the third match was for the World Heavyweight Championship, CM Punk versus Finn Balor. 20 minutes, 25 seconds, CM Punk won this match. I also went back, Leonard, and because of our changing our days when we recorded, I was able to go back and watch the first match that these guys had on Raw, which was on January 19th of this year. Both matches are okay, about 3 stars-ish. To me, that kind of territory, Finn Balor, seems motivated here. They haven't really had a ton for him to do that's interesting in a while, because he's been with the Judgment Day and like all the, shenanigans and people leaving and entering in that faction. So the whole part of the feud here with CM Punk was that CM Punk was trying to where's the Finn Balor of old type thing, which, I thought was good. But these matches are the WWE style, and Dave Meltzer talked online about it being extremely slow, and that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing when it's slow compared to like New Japan or AEW or whoever, but the WWE structure of matches, which we've talked about ad nauseum on this show, is very, all the matches are structured very similarly, in my opinion. And to me, that kind of takes away a little bit. But this match, I'll give, kind of a marginal thumbs up. How about that?
Mm-hmm.
So after this.
Oh, I would say I do know that CM Punk came out to the Chicago Bulls music and had the announcer announce him.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. That was very cool. I thought that was a good touch, that they were able to do that. After this, we finally got to see what was in the mysterious crate that said, don't open till February 28th. And we'd all speculated on who it was going to be. For those of you who thought it was Chris Jericho, we're not going down that avenue again. It's not Chris Jericho. it was Danhausen, which was a popular theory online. I think a lot of people thought it might be Danhausen. Mm-hmm. He was known to have left AEW and was going to sign with WWE. So on the debut itself, when they opened the crate, you could clearly see that the crate had been set up in a way that you could see the curtain and the people behind it backstage ready to come out. So to me, that was kind of weirdly executed. But you had dancers coming out, and then you had the reveal of Danhausen. And we talked about this with Royce Keyes at the Rumble. Now, that was in Saudi Arabia, obviously, but this was in the U.S. So note to WWE going forward, if anybody cares to pay attention, the people that watch WWE do not necessarily watch AEW. Now, the people that watch AEW probably have an idea of what's going on in WWE.
Yes.
But the people who watch WWE probably don't give a shit about AEW.
No, that is correct. And that has always been a thing. And, you know, say what you will, that was always something that, like, Vince and his guys were always kind of cognizant of. Even when they brought over, say, Harley Race from the NWA.
Right.
Back in 86. Like, they had to explain who Harley Race was.
Right. Right. And so you had Danhausen come out to crickets and then eventually boos, because people didn't know who he was and they didn't
right.
know
didn't
what
get
to
the,
expect. And
didn't get the gimmick.
And even if people, like, let's say a quarter of the people in the audience knew who Danhausen was, I still would say bringing him out this way is a bad idea. He's not the talent you surprise people with in a box. Mm-hmm. He is a comedic talent. He can wrestle, yes, mm-hmm. but he is more for laughs. Why would you bring him out in this way that is going to set an expectation? Mm-hmm. And
well, here's what I think. I don't know if everyone has said this online or anything has done this, but Jim Cornette has said anyone who comes out of a box is over.
Yeah, well, that got disproven.
Right. That's why they did it. To disprove that.
Well,
because Danhausen has gone back and forth with Cornette, trading. He sent Cornette a cameo because someone paid him to send Cornette a cameo.
Really?
Yeah. And this. So Cornette is like, I don't get what that guy's doing. I don't like that gimmick. But damn, he's very nice to me and I can't say anything.
That's funny.
So it would not surprise me at all if not Danhausen himself, if somebody in the back said, oh, let's do this out of a crate and rib Jim Cornette. That would not surprise me at all.
That would be hilarious. Bruce Pritchard is still there, so I think that's extremely possible. Yeah. So, you know, the debut didn't go well, but I like Danhausen. And this is, again,
I've seen of him, I do like him because I do like original characters and comedic characters, if done in the right way. And he can work as well, as you said.
This is a person who's trademarked his face makeup. Mm-hmm. So, like, I have upstairs, I have a Danhausen glass, I have a Danhausen coffee that he did with, you know, a company. I like the way he markets himself, and I think he's funny, and I think it was a big mistake for AEW to get rid of him. I really don't think it was smart, but Tony Khan doesn't like comedic characters. So there that is. Who cares?
Oh, well, I thought he loved Orange Cassidy.
That's somewhat of an exception, but not really, because Orange Cassidy doesn't talk a lot. He does a lot in the ring.
But he does dumb shit.
Well, he does. He has one gimmick where he puts his hand in his
right. He's game. I don't know everything about him, but everything I've ever seen, and comedy isn't talking. It can be other things. But
well,
he's certainly not someone I would take seriously.
Well, so that's what they want you to. They want, like, the whole point of the Orange Cassidy gimmick is to kind of put people on edge and kind of, like, mess with their head a little bit when he's putting his hand in his jeans so that he can kind of get the upper hand, because they want to always put over his wrestling ability. He's had belts in AEW and stuff, so they definitely lean more on the wrestling aspect of Orange Cassidy. But yes, he has been used for laughs from time to time.
Okay, I would need to watch more of him then to get that. And I don't know if you saw the tweet that I saw. It was Danhausen had tweeted something. He asked if Steve Austin was still the general manager of Raw.
The general manager of Raw.
Yes. And then Adam Pearce commented, tagging Sven Gulli, who is a Chicago staple. I thought you said this guy was creative. And Sven Gulli replied, no, I said he was crated and you uncrated him. So I'm not sure where Svengoolie got taken in there. And I think that was a playoff of Adam Pearce also being bald and Steve Austin looking. So
Yeah, you know, and that, you know, the clip on Raw I liked because
I watched that you sent me.
That was pure Danhausen. And like, you know, he cursed Dom and then Dom ended up losing the title to Penta, the Intercontinental title, I should say.
I think that's how you probably should have introduced him, was on Raw.
Thank you.
Have him come, just have him be a new guy backstage,
yep,
and introduce him again, like nobody knows who he is. And just have him, the whole thing where he agonized Adam Pearce,
yep,
and then where he cursed Dom. And then just have that be his gimmick. Don't let him wrestle for like several weeks. Just
for a while. Yeah.
Curse people and stuff happens to him.
Yeah.
And then maybe this leads to a match between Dom and Danhausen in WrestleMania or something.
Yeah.
That would be great. But yes. And from what I heard of the crowd on the clip with Dom, there was more of a response. It was not huge, but there seemed to be, oh, we're starting to figure this guy out. And we're starting to like this guy.
Yeah, WWE does the comedic characters well when they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if they use him in this way, they continue to use him in this way, I think it's smart. Mm-hmm. I think that, the way AEW debuted him years ago was they had Adam Cole try to go under the ring to get a table or a chair, and he pulled out a chair with Danhausen on it. But he didn't say anything. He just appeared, you know, so I think that they should have done exactly as you said, just kind of debuted him backstage on Raw. I think that would have been the wiser choice to go. The last match of the night was the men's Elimination Chamber match. And the order there, we had Javon Evans, LA Knight, Trick Williams, Logan Paul, Cody Rhodes, and our winner, Randy Orton. And Logan Paul eliminated three people. He was the guy that I guess they wanted to highlight a little bit in this one. It was 25 minutes and 20 seconds. So the theory is now we're recording this before SmackDown. But the theory is that the ticket sales for WrestleMania 42 have not been what they wanted them to be so far.
Try lowering them.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast, but yes, I
know.
And so the apparent one of the things they might do is take the title off of Drew McIntyre before then, in an effort to put it back on Cody Rhodes to hopefully bring in more ticket sales. So they've announced at the end of this, in with post show, I think they announced a match on SmackDown between Drew McIntyre and Cody Rhodes. So if Cody Rhodes wins, you'd be setting up a match between Cody Rhodes and Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
which is your most potential biggest name value match,
probably,
of what you have available.
Yeah, you know, so that looks to be what they're going to do there. But before we get to that, this Elimination Chamber match to me again, you know, like I know that WWE's high on Javon Evans. I think he's good in the ring, but why is he here? He's here to be the guy who does the high flying stuff.
Right, right. And they usually have a guy like that in here. I mean, Kofi Kingston was that guy.
Yeah, and
it was the guy from the Street Profits they liked for a minute.
It's just, yeah. And, you know, like Kofi Kingston, yes, eventually they pushed Kofi Kingston, mm-hmm. but it's like whenever he was used in situations like this, it was just like, it to me, it looked weird. It's like, which of these things is not like the other?
Yeah.
Like,
who's the Street Profit guy they liked?
Montez Ford, I think.
Yes, I think he was in.
Yeah.
They used him at that potential. Ron Killings at one point was used like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they, oh, and I forgot to add during this match, the masked man gimmick, which they've gone to a lot, I feel like, over the past few years. They had a returning Seth Rollins, who helped Cody Rhodes eliminate Logan Paul. And then as soon as that ended, Randy Orton hit the RKO and defeated Cody Rhodes. So this match, again, it was what it was. I guess I could go, like, I hesitate to. Yeah, I'll go 3 stars on this one, too, just because, to me, again, this match wasn't super interesting. I still don't like Logan Paul. I don't. Mm-hmm. like how they push him, and the commentators every time have to make excuses like, well, no matter what you say, even if you hate him, you have to admit he's a great athlete. They say that every time he appears.
Yeah, because they and while that might be true, it doesn't excuse anything.
Right. So, you know, not to go on a, you know, I don't want to go on a tangent on all the things I have issues with WWE wise, but like, to me, this WrestleMania is shaping up to be very pedestrian, middling, in my
opinion. You paused. Pedestrian was the first word that popped in my head.
Yeah. So, you know, you have Roman Reigns and CM Punk, which they're trying very hard. Those two talent are trying very hard to make that a big match that people look forward to. And it might be decent. So, you know, we'll see what happens. Randy Orton is back in the main event. He is a very loyal, steadfast employee there. And I think he has 14 championships, 14, possibly 15. But, you know, so we'll see what happens. We'll see if Cody Rhodes wins. But Leonard, what do you think of my thoughts on the chamber match itself? I know you said it should go away, and I agreed with you. But do you see you saw what I was talking about in terms of the structure? How?
Yeah. And we talked about that with the Rumble and some other matches that they do. And then that's on both sides. You seem to have this gimmick match, and they seem to find a formula, and they just adhere to that formula only.
Yeah.
And if you do it enough, it saturates even something as simple as like the hardcore matches back in the late 90s when that's all they did. It was just too much. So, yeah, I can picture, without having watched those matches, I can picture how they went in my head from your description of them. So, again, you know, it's hard to say, well, how would you do it different or what would you do different? But I think the best idea is what I said. You take it away, you wait 3 or 4 years and bring it back and make sure you have a storyline where you have 4 or 5 very viable people dovetailing into it where you don't know who could, everyone could win and you don't know who might.
Right. Yeah.
So, there you go. Yeah. Now, if we're at the end, I do have something special for Chad that we have done a few multi-part trivia questions lately. So I've got one on the Elimination Chamber for Chad. There have been 9 guys who have appeared in 5 or more WWE Elimination Chamber matches. So we're just saying the men. Can you name those 9 guys who have been in 5 matches or more?
I will not be able to name all of them, but I'll try to do my best.
All right. Anytime you want to give up, you can. Or I'll try to give you some hints too. But
certainly Triple H would be one.
Triple H has the best win percentage. He is 6-4.
Okay. How about Kane?
That was one I thought you would not get. He is at the bottom. He has 5 appearances with no wins.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Kofi.
Kofi is 6 appearances, 1 win.
Jericho.
Jericho is another one I thought you might not get because I kind of forgot he had been in so many because he hadn't been around for so long. 8 appearances, 1 win.
Cena.
Cena is 8 appearances with 4 wins.
Okay, how many am I at right now?
So that is 1, 2, 3, 4. You've got 5 of 9. You got 4 left to go.
Okay, so how about,
go ahead.
No, he hasn't been in that many. How about Big Show?
Big Show is not here, and I didn't write down the ones below that, but Big Show has less than 5.
That's one strike then. How about Randy Orton?
Randy Orton is the obvious one. 10 appearances, most of anybody, 2 wins. So you have 3 left to go.
3 left to go.
All of them have 5 appearances. One has 3 wins, one has 1 win, one has no wins.
Okay. How about Edge?
Edge is incorrect. 2 strikes.
That's 2 strikes. Who am I missing? How about the Miz?
Miz, no, that's incorrect.
Okay, that's 3 strikes. So
3 strikes. So the ones you missed were Daniel Bryan, 5 appearances with 3 wins, which surprised me he had 3 wins. CM Punk with 5 appearances and 1 win, and the one that I did not think you would get, Sheamus, 5 appearances, 0 wins.
See, I thought CM Punk, but I was like, oh, he hadn't been in that many, but he actually was. Daniel Bryan, I wouldn't have guessed, and Sheamus, I wouldn't have thought of.
Is Sheamus still around? I was trying to remember if he was even still around.
He was at one point in the past year. I remember him.
Yeah, I've seen him, then I haven't heard anything. And quick trivia of the women, the most appearances is six with no wins. Who do you think that is?
Would be well, I mean, I assume it's either Becky Bailey or Charlotte.
That is all incorrect. It is Liv Morgan.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, interesting. I would not have guessed that one either.
All right.
Okay. Interesting. All right. Well, I appreciate the trivia. Let us know what you thought of the Elimination Chamber. If I'm way off, if you somebody out there loved it, please let me know. Check out our other shows as well. We do rebooks, we do stuff with stables, stupid questions, and check out our podcasts. We are available wherever you listen to those. Hit the like button, subscribe to our content. For Leonard, my name is Chad, and we will see you next time.